News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. Last day of February. Now, next year's a leap year. This is not a leap year. So we will get into, you know, and hit us on the text line, too. If you were born on
29th,
what up?
Yeah.
When do you celebrate? Because the 29th only, let's see.
Comes around once every 4 years.
Once every 4 years, yeah. Right. So do you, is that the way you do it? Or do you do it the day before, day after?
I remember I had like a third grade teacher that was born on that day, and it seemed like it was the only thing she talked about, was being a baby born on the 29th.
Well, then we're not going to talk about it at all. Let's go with the Quinn Hillier, QuinnHillier.com, and the Washington Examiner joins us this morning to talk about a number of things, some in the state of Alabama and some more national and international scope. Quinn, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. And if you're born on leap year, you only have a birthday every 4 years, so you get to live to be 280.
That's what I'm screaming right there. That'd be nice.
Quinn, with the Alabama legislature going into session a week from today, one of the major topics will be school choice, just like last year. And let me read this one headline to you from USA Today. A school choice revolution is storming the country this year. Will your state be next? They said Iowa and Utah. School choice proponents had some major wins recently. What are your thoughts on this? And what this proposal, there's at least one proposal already for the Alabama legislative session after they talked about that some last year. Talk a bit about school choice.
Well, first of all, you're talking to an obsessive with school choice. The first time I wrote something in favor of school choice was in November of 1981.
Wow.
41 and a half years ago. So this is an important issue to me. School choice lets the money follow the parents instead of following the bureaucracy. And there are all sorts of different, you know, sort of versions of school choice. I'll take any or all of the above. Where it's been tried, it has been remarkably successful in almost every case. And so, you know, I can make the case for school choice. But for those who know they're for school choice, don't need a sales pitch, what's really important is the legislators need a sales pitch. And there's a new organization headed up by Terry Lathan, who is the longtime chairman of the state Alabama Republican Party.
Right.
It's called ROAM, which is Republicans on a Mission, R-O-A-M. And they're looking for volunteers to attend a school choice hearing in Montgomery, or email or text assigned legislators, or do both, to tell the legislators that, yes, parents here and supporters in Alabama really do want families, parents, children, to have a choice of where to send their schools. And so it's a very organized effort, ROAM, Republicans on a Mission. And if you have any interest in helping, you can email them at roamforalabama@gmail.com. That's roamforalabama@gmail.com, or just call the state Republican headquarters to sign up.
Quinn, you said that where this has been tried and done, it's been successful. What would you say constitutes success? Would it be like an increase in the graduation rate or higher testing scores? Or what have you seen from some of the municipalities and states that have already gone through with this?
The choice schools tend to outperform, sometimes dramatically outperform, the related purely public bureaucratic schools. In fact, there are schools all over the country. Philip Howard, who wrote The Death of Common Sense, he's a centrist reformer. He has noted that there are a number of examples where literally the choice school, the charter school in some of these cases, literally sets up shop in the same building or building complex as the regular public school. This has happened in a number of places. This, of course, isn't mandatory, but where they have set up in the same spot, so they're serving the same constituency, but just basically a wall between them, the choice school has dramatically outperformed in whether you're talking about test scores, whether you're talking about graduation rate, whether you're talking about disciplinary problems across the board. Because when you, there are a whole lot of reasons for it, but one of them is when parents or grandparents, as the case may be, choose the school for their kid rather than being their child, rather than being assigned the school, they buy in. They feel invested in it. And when they feel invested in it, they take ownership of it. They become more involved parents in a good way, making sure that their children get a good education, et cetera, et cetera. There are all sorts of reasons why school choice works, but the evidence is overwhelming, whether you're talking about voucher schools or scholarship or charter schools, school choice works.
Okay, so Larry Stutz, Bill, are we talking about that specifically here in Alabama?
Well, that would be the one that would come up next when the legislative session begins.
Exactly.
He hasn't pre-filed it, but there's a draft out there.
Yeah, so there's a draft out there, and I guess you're aware of that. And so we're talking about ESAs, these savings accounts for the parents. $6,000 would go to follow the child to. It could be a church-based school, private school, homeschooling, or even a public school outside the district where you're zoned. This is an interesting quote right here, Quinn, from Stutz. It's strictly left up to the schools and the parents on whether they participate or not. So a given private school can say, no, we don't want to be part of that program, and then they're not going to be dragged into it, if you want to put it that way. If they're for keeping their student exactly. population as it is, they're not going to be charged with changing any of that.
Right, yeah, and that was one of the fears of some parents who oppose school choice, usually parents with children in sort of very high-performing private schools. They're saying, well, they're not going to then allow us to still have competitive admissions where you have to test high to get in or whatever. And, you know, we don't want to have lower-performing students get in and drag down our quality.
Yeah, or distracting students.
So this avoids that.
Yeah.
This avoids that. But most private schools are happy to participate in the program because they'll say, look, any child that can pass our test, we will welcome into our fold. And so it's a good thing for most schools to do it.
Okay. All right.
And one thing that always comes up, you know, when we talk education in this state especially, Alabama always seems to rank near the bottom of the state's rankings. Do you, Quinn, do you feel if there is some form of school choice that passes this year or in the future, do you think that will improve Alabama's overall education numbers?
I think that will improve Alabama's overall education numbers. I think there's a lot of other stuff that needs to be done that's going on. I think they need to revamp their standards. They got to get rid of the Common Core math standards. But there's a good working group on math curriculum that's going on that looks like it's moving in a reformist direction. So there's a lot that needs to be done, but school choice is a very big part of it, and yes, I think it will improve the state of Alabama education across the state.
I'm wondering how many states, where has this been in place for several years where you can track and see exactly what's going on? New Mexico, maybe? I'm not quite sure.
There are all sorts of
examples.
Organizations. You can just Google it, and there's a National School Choice Association that tracks statistics. And look, this is even though this is a Republican effort that I'm talking about, Republicans on a mission, but this has been a bipartisan thing. Former Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu of Louisiana has been a big advocate for public charter schools nationally, and heck, Joe Biden used to be before he changed his mind like he does a lot of times. But this can and should be a bipartisan effort.
Interesting. All right, maybe finally we get a little actual movement on schools in Alabama. You know, we've talked about it, school choice, but you're right. Something feels different, doesn't it, Dalton?
Yeah, going into this legislative session, and I guess we'll see. But one more time, Quinn, before we move on to other matters, you said if folks want to have their voice heard, if they're pro-school choice, Rome, Alabama. Is that
Rome
the
for Alabama?
Rome for Alabama.
R-O-A-M-F-O-R. Alabama, roamforalabama@gmail.com, or call the state Alabama Republican Party office.
Well, since we last talked, hit the year anniversary of the Russian war in Ukraine, and a couple of surprise appearances from American politicians. You had Biden over there last week, and then Janet Yellen, surprise, surprise, showed up to talk to Zelensky yesterday.
She jumped out of a cake.
Wow. And she promised more money coming to Ukraine. Where do you stand on this now that we're a year in? Are we sending too much money over there? Are we not doing enough militarily? Where does Quinn Hillier stand on this right now?
I'm totally in 100% support of helping the Ukrainians. Everybody talks about how much money we've sent. No, that's the total that has been pledged. The amount of money and weapons and stuff that has been sent is not nearly as much. The problem is we're doing it piecemeal rather than giving all the equipment to the Ukrainians that they need to win now.
Yep.
We're doing what we did in Vietnam, which is doing just enough for the bad guys
to hang in there. Yeah, to hang in there.
And look, if Joe Biden is serious, he needs to send the F-16 jets along with the Abrams tanks. He needs to help Ukraine win it fast. Otherwise, he's bleeding Ukraine dry, and he's bleeding us dry by doing this piecemeal stuff. If he's not going to commit to having them win and win fast, then I don't know what the point is.
Well, I think one of the ultimate goals is to bleed Russia dry, or at least as dry as possible. But do you think, Putin's red line, I think that's probably playing into this as well. It's kind of like we're just inching over it one at a time. If we just threw everything at him right now, maybe Russia would take even greater offense to that. Is that kind of what you think the Biden administration's...
Yeah, but that's nuts. Look, first he was afraid to send the Patriot missile because that would make Russia too mad, as if Russia's not already mad at us. And then 6 months later, I guess we can send the Patriots, and Russia didn't get any madder than they already are. Then it was the tanks. Then it was the certain long-range missiles that Ukraine can fire. Now he's dithering over the F-16. Look, Russia is going to do what Russia is going to do, and Russia's already furious at us, and their decision about whether to use nukes isn't going to be about whether or not we've provided F-16 jets. It's going to be about whether they want to use nukes. And I don't think they're that stupid, because if they use tactical nukes, the winds blow west to east. It blows radioactive fallout right back over Russia. I don't think they're going to do it.
Speaking of Joe Biden, we'll talk about the prospect of him running again in 2024 and other matters along those lines. Quinn, so hang on, and we'll do that after the break, okay?
Sounds good.
All right.
Quinn Hillier, you can read his work at Washington Examiner, also quinnhillier.com, and he's also on Twitter. And we'll get into these races heading into 2024 for president and for the Republican primary coming up with Quinn Hillier.
Good morning from Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, our Ascension text line, 251-343-0106. Anything that you'd like to get to us about our conversation with Quinn Hillier from quinnhillier.com, that's good to go. Just text us, and we're happy to read those. It's 8:24 on Mobile Mornings.
Yeah, and Quinn, the presidential prospects lining up for 2024, and the will-he-won't-he game being played with the Biden camp. I guess his wife, Jill Biden, the latest to say she doesn't mind if Joe runs for another term. So let's start there on the Democrat side. Do you think Joe Biden will run once again, and should he run once again?
It looks like he is planning to run. The answer to should he run is absolutely 100% no. It's an insult to the country for him to say that by the time he finishes what would be a second term, assuming he wins, which he probably wouldn't, but assuming he finishes a second term at age 86, that he is the one person out of 330 million people that can do the job better at age 86 than anybody else can at age 50 or 60 or 65. Look, it's just an actuarial fact that people slow down, and not everybody slows down at the same rate. I know some incredibly fit 86-year-olds, but Joe Biden has clearly slowed down so much between 74 and 80 that if you just project out, he's going to be absolutely doddering if he's around at all by age 86. And he would be the leader of the free world, overseeing a nuclear arsenal and asking 330 million Americans, plus basically the whole world, to trust that he will be of sound mind and body and able to do the job. That's not fair to the country.
On the Republican side, there's a number of candidates or possible candidates we could talk about. Talk about Tim Scott a little bit, where, how you see his prospects, and I guess is he already...
He hasn't officially entered yet.
But he's already... Well, where is he right now? What's up with Tim Scott?
Well, Tim Scott did a so-called listening tour in Iowa. This is the senator from South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
I have been high on him since I first interviewed him in the summer of 2010.
You have been?
And sat down with him for 50 minutes, just the two of us, really drilled down. He's sincere, he's smart, he's honest, he's principled. He may or may not run. He did a great speech in Iowa, one of the best Republican speeches I have heard in years and years and years. And he has a lot of potential. He also needs, though, to get better known. Of course, he would start out very low in the polls. So whether he runs or not, I don't know. But either way, he's a voice of fresh air. He's upbeat. He's positive. He talks like Reagan and Kemp did about an opportunity society and about the greatness of America in terms of letting people rise from humble roots and all the rest of it. He is a breath of fresh air, and I hope we see more of him in one way or another. Tim Scott of South Carolina.
Yeah, and if Scott does run, and whoever ends up running for the Republican ticket, I guess we'll know pretty early on. You know, once we get to that South Carolina primary, if Scott or Haley don't do well there, then you can pretty much go ahead and mark them off of those bingo cards. But I think we'll have a pretty good idea of whether it'll be Trump or someone else just after those first few states, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, there haven't been a lot of contests that went, you know, more than halfway into the primary season without being pretty much over for quite a long time. The last time either party has gone to a truly contested convention was 1976 with Ford versus Reagan. So we'll probably know a lot after the first three or four contests. But I'm not saying it's absolutely going to be over. There'll still be some fighting going on right into late March and early April.
And quickly, what do you make of they're calling what Ron DeSantis is doing basically a shadow campaign? He hasn't said that he'll run officially, but he's got this book that came out today. He's been doing a book tour and speaking in different parts of the country. You think that kind of a smart move from DeSantis to not officially announce while he's doing this runaround?
Yeah, and that's the same thing Tim Scott is doing. You're allowed to do a lot of exploring without it actually counting, you know, making you follow all the rules of a campaign. Now, there are advantages to announcing, but there are also disadvantages. And right now, the advantages to not announcing are better, and I won't go into all the details, but basically that's what Scott is doing. That's what Ron DeSantis is doing. And it gets their name out there and DeSantis also has a TV ad out, which is pretty powerful.
I'd read his stuff at the Washington Examiner or QuinnHillier.com or just Google Quinn Hillier, and that'll do it right there. And Quinn, we appreciate your time again today.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, guys.
You got it.
All right. There you go, Quinn Hillier. And after the break, we'll check in on the Ascension Technologies text line, 251-343-0106. You can also call that same number if you want to hop on the air with us right here on Mobile Mornings.
Also, the interesting World War II history in Aliceville, Alabama. We'll talk about that. 8:30, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5.
A34 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. This segment of the show brought to you by the local personal injury law firm, Tobias and Comer Law. Desi Tobias and Brian Comer and that whole crew doing and have been doing great work in our area for well over five decades now. And some tips for you, as we still have a lot of construction going on the roadways around here and really across the entire state, and a lot of accidents happen in those construction zones. Some tips from TobiasComerLaw.com. Make sure you're not following too closely. Make sure you allow 20 feet for every 10 miles an hour of speed, and slow on down once you head towards those construction zones. The speed limit is posted to slow to 55 miles per hour in some of these areas on on I-10 where they're doing that work. Make sure you eliminate distractions. That's important no matter where or how you're driving, that you're not texting or, you know, looking for that fry you dropped on the floorboard. That can always cause some issues for you. And remember that Alabama law has increased the fine in some of these construction zones, so you could really pay for it if you're not slowing down to those speeds you need to. You can find those tips and a whole lot more at TobiasComerLaw.com. And if you feel you might have a personal injury case, you can call for a free consultation 24/7. The number is 251-432-5001. That's 251-432-5001. And again, you can check out more about Tobias and Comer Law at TobiasComerLaw.com.
So Aliceville, Alabama, which is west of Tuscaloosa. Their high school was a loser yesterday.
No, they won. That's where that came up this morning. St. Luke's, our first local team that played in the Final Four yesterday, they beat Mars Hill Bible. The Wildcats on Friday will play in the Class 2A title game against Aliceville after the Yellow Jackets won yesterday.
So you had that in the sports, and I think right after the sports I said to you, it was like quarter till 7 or so, I said, do you know anything about Aliceville? Unusual history of Aliceville? And you're like, no, I don't think so. And something was stuck in my brain. I said, there was something, some kind of POW camp or something that was there. And it sounded very odd to you.
Yeah.
And that's how it sounded to me when I read this article maybe 15 years ago. So during World War II, the state of Alabama was home to approximately 1,600 German prisoners of war in 24 camps. But
1,600 or I think 16,000.
16,000 in 24 camps, but the most prominent camps were in Opelika, maybe Fort McClellan, and also Aliceville. Now, Fort McClellan was chosen because it was a military compound. Aliceville and Opelika were chosen for the opposite reasons. It wasn't much of anything.
Yeah.
And so they were able to, they wanted them to be in more rural areas, right? So what happened was in North Africa, we captured all of these 275,000 prisoners, enemy soldiers, most of them German, some of them were Italian, and then here comes Camp Aliceville. Within the camps, they were conformed to the 1929 Geneva Conventions, which prescribed the parameters for humane treatment of POWs, and the American military stocked abundant provisions for their dietary and recreational needs. Listen to this. One of the German prisoners wrote his family and described his temporary home as a golden cage. He absolutely loved it. He loved it. He was a prisoner.
He was a POW.
But he was, you know, treated that well. Each major camp established camp colleges, and prisoners could enroll in a wide variety of courses, including history, mathematics, science, and things like that. Pretty interesting. Auburn was Alabama Polytechnic at the time.
So we were teaching them? We were teaching these prisoners of war?
We were. Hmm. And so then they were discussing offering courses to the prisoners, but following Germany's defeat and the discovery of the atrocities of the Holocaust, American military officials feared that the presence of Nazis among the college instructors, and then they took control of the camp colleges. New courses were introduced, trying to kind of Americanize them, I guess you would say. Among the Nazis and among the Germans in these camps were those who had Nazi leanings or true beliefs, and those who were anti-Nazi. They had to separate them. The biggest conflict was among the prisoners themselves, some Nazi, some anti-Nazi. And this is interesting, too. So following Germany's surrender in 1945, Alabama's POWs were sent back to their devastated homelands during the difficult years of post-war reconstruction. Some German veterans appealed to their former hosts for assistance. Alabamians responded by sending food and clothing and other forms of goodwill. In the decades after World War II, a number of former POWs returned to Alabama to reconnect with their past. They would have work duty out on the streets. They would be out there among the population of Aliceville. And some of the people got along with the Alabamians and vice versa. Some of these guys, Nazis, were very young. So people could view them almost in a sympathetic way. And they did. Many did. So it's an interesting history. And I think in Aliceville, they've got a museum there about it. Opelika also has something. Otherwise, anywhere else that these camps were, they were not nearly as significant as Aliceville and Opelika. And there's really not a trace of this ever happening. But Aliceville does acknowledge it and welcomes all of, you know, anybody that comes by to the museum to say, here's what happened between 1942 and 1945. When I read that story, it's the first I'd ever heard of anything like that.
Yeah, I was entirely ignorant. I had no idea that was going on. Mm-hmm. That's something else.
Yeah, it really is. So on the text line, if you are aware of that, and I'll bet you with our text line, people were aware of it.
Yeah.
But when did you first learn about it, or is this the first time you have heard about it? So interesting.
Chris in Orange Beach said Alberta has a huge German population. That's exactly what I said during the break. How many of them left and went to Alberta?
That's not how that German that was a German population from the Midwest.
Yeah.
From Illinois. So they were German Americans, came down to Alberta and kind of planted their flag there. But still a large German influence in Alberta.
That's where
but not from the Nazi Germans.
That's where they planted their sausage. That's why the sausage festival right there in Alberta every
year. Not once, but twice a year.
Yeah, that's right. One of your stories this morning, one of our three big things, graduation rates across the state. And this is very interesting, especially with the pandemic, of course. And looking at the rates for graduation for 2022, for Alabama, the graduation rate dropped below 90% for the first time since 2017. The class of 2022 had an 88.2% graduation rate in Alabama. The year prior, that was at 90.7%, so about a 2.5-point drop from year to year. That translates to more than 3,000 students that left high school without a diploma.
Yeah, they didn't walk. They didn't walk the aisle.
They did not. No handshakes for them.
No.
And we'll get into the Baldwin County and Mobile County, the specific graduation rates there, but when compared, and this is from an AL.com article, when compared to some of the states around us...
I'm really surprised by this.
I am too. So I don't know if it's more difficult or less difficult to graduate in some of these other states, but Florida last year had a worse graduation rate than Alabama, not by much. Theirs was 87.4%. It also dropped from year to year, as they were above 90% back in 2021. The one that really gets me, Georgia's high school graduation rate, mm-hmm. they set a record, and still only 84.1% graduated out of Georgia public high schools, or maybe that's all of the schools in Georgia, but that's their high all time, and it was at 84.1%, a good 4 points below Alabama's.
That's curious for sure. And also that it went up in the year affected by the pandemic, where almost across the board, everybody went down. So how they pulled that off in Georgia, I'm not sure. A little hocus pocus.
Yeah.
But their rate, their rate was as low as 83.7% in 2021. So why, I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. Georgia has got a greater... has got a much bigger population center with Atlanta. The other Georgia cities are Savannah, Macon, Columbus, I guess would be population centers. None of them are even as big as Mobile, let alone Birmingham.
Mm.
So the Atlanta is the big sprawling. Is there a problem in Atlanta schools? Where is the drop off?
Yeah,
also, there are some areas of Georgia that are very rural, very poor counties. Hancock County, where Sparta, Georgia is, I did broadcasting a couple of counties away, and I know that was one of the poorest counties in the state, if not the poorest, and their facilities for their high schools they weren't really good.
Ah.
Horace and Harvey Grant came from there, so they made it out.
Yeah.
Otherwise, most people did not. So it's just interesting that Georgia, you would guess with the lottery and all the success and trying to get into the University of Georgia is nearly impossible.
Yeah.
That they would have a higher graduation.
So that would actually be an argument for those who are anti-lottery. Mm-hmm. Say, hey, if this funding is supposed to help schools, look at Georgia. They're only graduating 84% of their population.
Yeah.
Mississippi and Tennessee had better graduation numbers than Alabama, albeit only slightly, 88.9% for Mississippi, 89.8% for Tennessee. And some stats here. So of the 3,000 odd students who did not graduate with the class of 2022, 6 out of 10 were male and half were white. And yet you were wondering, where in Georgia is that huge drop-off that's affecting the rest of the state? We know where it is in Alabama. Montgomery County absolutely dismal, and a huge drop-off for them since the pandemic began. So in 2022, Montgomery County had a graduation rate of only 67.4%. So just
20,
about
20-point drop.
Yeah, 3 in 10 weren't walking across that stage last year. And back in 2019, the Montgomery graduation rate was 87.5%. So before the pandemic, nearly 9 out of 10 were graduating. As of last year, just over 6 out of 10 were graduating in Montgomery. Pretty dismal numbers there. You look at the Baldwin County, just district-wide, AL.com has the Baldwin County numbers for 2022, 85.8% graduation rate. That's down from 90.3% pre-pandemic. So in 2019, 90.3%. Last year, 85.8% for the whole of Baldwin County. Clicking on over to Mobile County, and looks like we had a drop-off in Mobile County as well, from 86.4% in 2019 to 83.1% last year. So not as good as even the statewide numbers for Mobile County, and definitely not as good as Baldwin County's numbers. But you can already see the effects from this, from the pandemic, and from basically, I mean, if we look back at March of 2020, I guess some schools had already called it by March, April, as they were heading into summer of that year.
Yeah.
I don't know how many were ready to go virtual at that point, but definitely going into the fall of 2020, spring of 2020, and even 2021 school year, they were letting people stay at home. They were letting people do online work. And clearly that had a major effect, not just across the state, but the entire nation.
And how about the schools that just kept on keeping on? A lot of the private schools, for higher education, University of Mobile, it was kind of like business as usual, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And we talked to the president, Lonnie, about that. It was just business as usual in the fall of the pandemic. St. Paul's, I know, was pretty much business as usual, and that's from pre-K all the way up to 12th grade. So those that persisted with the normal plan, did it probably as safely as they could, but they were successful and got out alive for the most part, and actually had a good school year. By the way, on the Ascension Technology text line, talking about Aliceville, texter says there is a historical marker on Highway 59 in Loxley, just north of I-10, about a POW camp there. This is the first I've heard of Aliceville. So
yeah.
How about that?
And let's see. This unnamed texter says, there were 3 rural German POW camps in Baldwin County. Nothing remains.
Wow.
A librarian from Foley has given programs about this. Texter says, I knew a German man who retired to Fairhope. He had been a captive in Aliceville's POW camp. He was a doctor. After the war, he immigrated to Long Island, eventually married a woman from Alabama. This is Susan texting this.
Wow.
And she said he hated the Nazis.
Wow.
Can you imagine right now, if we were taking in Russian POWs in parts of Alabama, or back in the wars in the Middle East, if we were taking in some POWs from Afghanistan, there'd be a major uproar.
Took in some Russians. Finally, there'd be great hockey in Alabama. Right?
About time.
About time. 8:49, Dan and Dalton. That is Kane with his final report of the morning. So commit it to memory. 8:53 at FM Talk 106.5. Quickly on the text line, I'm from Opa-locka. Some of the POWs were Rommel's Africa Corps. Yeah, there was a victory by the United States, or by the West in the in North Africa. That's for real. And also a text we're talking about, the Germans were good at electronics and woodworking.
Yeah. A texter said, after serving in the Battle of the Bulge in World War II, my grandfather, Dan Rencher Jr., was the mayor of Opa-locka in 1949. Used to talk about the POW camps a lot, and how they used to enjoy seeing the different trades that the German prisoners were good at, like electronics and woodworking.
There you go.
I've learned a lot of new things this morning.
Yeah.
Say that much.
Thanks to me.
Thanks to Dan.
Huh?
That's right. Yeah, more than I ever learned in my high school career.
Make sure you got that part in there. Thanks to you, Dan.
Hey, coming up on the Jeff Poor Show, maybe we'll learn a lot there.
Oh, we always do.
Senator Tommy Tuberville joins Jeff in that first hour. That'll be an interesting conversation. In hour number two, State Senator Arthur Orr joins the Jeff Poor Show. And in hour number three, Jeff was referencing this a lot yesterday, from Alabama Appleseed. Is it Carla Crowder that'll be on with Jeff Poor? And you've probably heard those Appleseed commercials running during the Jeff Poor Show here over these last few weeks. So that'll be also so another interesting conversation there.
Okay.
We talked with Quinn a little bit about the candidates for 2024. Of course, Donald Trump, the former president, was the first to jump in there. Haley was next, Nikki Haley. And then you have some that aren't quite officially in yet. One of those would be Ron DeSantis, and he has a book that came out today about how he's been doing things in Florida. And it's been interesting. So they're kind of calling this like a shadow presidential campaign that DeSantis has been doing here recently. I know he'll be here in Alabama at the end of next week. On next Thursday night, he'll be speaking to a group of Republicans, I think up in Birmingham.
Yes,
is the plan.
I think they had to move it from one venue to the to another because ticket demand was so great.
Yeah, they had not enough seats in that first place. So they think DeSantis will probably officially announce sometime around June. He visited New York City, Philly, Chicago last week to talk about crime.
He's visiting those Democrat-run cities that are in trouble with crime. And, you know, I'm sure the audience is a very willing audience to DeSantis's message.
No doubt. And then on Friday, he was just a few miles down the road from Mar-a-Lago, right next to Trump's home territory there. And today begins a national book tour. He'll be in Texas, California, and then come to Alabama next week. But in return, Trump yesterday posted a video, and he was talking policy, specifically with China. So he pledged to completely eliminate the U.S.'s reliance on China with a radical trade overhaul that would, quote, take a sledgehammer to globalism. Trump said he would impose a system of universal baseline tariffs on most foreign imports. He would revoke China's most favored nation trade status, also adopt a four-year plan to phase out all Chinese imports of essential goods. He said everything from electronics to steel to pharmaceuticals, and also ban federal contracts for any company that outsources to China. So interesting, and now as China is back in the back in the bullseye of mainstream media news, and these are very populist messages that Trump posted yesterday and what he ran on back in 2015 that led to a great 2016 for him.
Yeah, and so it was late last week we talked about the story about how China is very aggressively opening up numerous manufacturing plants in Mexico, in central Mexico, and how they're trying to get around the tariffs in that way, and right now are doing that. There was one story where there was about 30 different on-site manufacturing plants that were available for the highest bidder, and all 30 were Chinese companies.
And they bought them all up.
Bought them all up, yeah.
And one Trump supporter, I don't know if he's still a supporter. He was at one point. Tom Brady, of course, he retired. I guess he retired after this last year. We'll see if he jumps back in. But, you know, he had already had this big contract coming up with Fox Sports where he was going to jump in and immediately be their number one voice for play-by-play or for color commentary.
And he's going to wait a year, right?
So he's taking a year off. And reports say the reason behind that is, well, twofold. So the rumor mill has already started. They think he's trying to get back with his wife or ex-wife, Gisele Bündchen. But what do you think about this, Dan? They're reporting that Tom Brady is exploring a career in comedy, stand-up comedy. I don't know how seriously to take this report.
The only thing funny about Tom Brady being a comic is the concept of Tom Brady being a comic. I can't imagine that he's going to he's not exactly Don Rickles yelling Omaha. I can't go with that.
So in this Radar Online report.
That's got to be.
All of his.
Is this from The Onion?
No. It's from one of these, rumor rags.
Uh-huh.
One of the sources said Tom was a terrific quarterback, but he needs to toss this idea before it's too late. So one of his jokes was, if I can find it in time here. What did the linebacker say to the flight attendant?
What?
Put me in, coach.
Put me in, coach.
That one will slay at the comedy club.
859 FM Talk 106.5. Dan and Dalton and Jeff Pornick.